Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Welcome to another episode of Voices for Excellence. I'm your host, Dr. Michael Connor, CEO and founder of the Agile Evolutionary Group, and of course, the proud host of VFE. And today's guest is one of those superintendents that doesn't just have a national name, but is known for impact within the work. Dr. Michael J. Barnes, I tell you, I'm a big fan of his work. We've had many conversations around education, around systems, but more importantly, how to be able to improve learning outcomes for Generation Alpha and Generation Beta. Dr. Michael J. Barnes is the superintendent of Mayfield City Schools in Mayfield Heights, Ohio, and he serves as the president of BASA, which is the Buckeye Association of School Administrators. That is the Superintendent's Association for Ohio. And let's not forget, I can't forget this, he is a proud member of Alpha Phi Alpha Fraternity Incorporated, 06. I had to get that
06.
Out.
06. I'm glad you did.
Without further ado, I want to bring on and introduce my fraternal brother, my professional brother, my just original brother, Dr. Michael J. Barnes. Doc, frat, how you doing?
Well, I appreciate that introduction. You know, I don't know how much I owe you for that, but I really appreciate it. You know, hey, listen, we're just gearing up for the start of school, feeling blessed and honored to be able to serve this great community here in Mayfield. You know, we're made up of four communities, Mayfield Heights, Mayfield Village, Highland Heights, and Gates Mills. Tremendous families, talented staff. So we're ready to go, you know, professionally, that's where we're at. Personally, hey, you know, the Lord continues to bless me and my family, and I never miss a moment to share how much they mean to me and how much, you know, I pray for them every day for their strength and wisdom to continue to grow like mine. So all is good, Doc. I'm just so appreciative of this opportunity to spend some time with you.
Nah, it's so good to have you on here. And you know, within many of our conversations, I'm just a big fan of the work that you're doing, big fan of the work that you're doing for kids, and also the innovative work. We're going to get to be able to talk about that, some of the really broad, and to my audience, really broad, innovative designs that Dr. Barnes has brought into Mayfield. But before we get into that, and then again, I want to say congratulations on your book just released. We're going to have some time to be able to talk about that. You'll be able to unpack that, have my audience or guide them in a direction on how to be able to purchase that book. And I tell you, I want you to be able to unpack it because it's just absolutely extraordinary. But how you leveraged and brought threads together into leadership within your book is just phenomenal. We'll have you unpack that. But you ready to go?
Yes, sir. Let's do it.
Right. Let's do this now. You are the superintendent of Mayfield City Schools, president of the Buckeye Association of School Administrators. People know you from those dimensions, the work that you have done at AASA nationally. But what song, to my audience, right? What song describes your leadership signature in the AC stage of education? And Doc, AC stage of education means after COVID-19.
Sure. Thank you for that question. I would have to say that don't kill you can only make you stronger by Kanye West. You know, the pandemic tested every facet of the educational landscape, and that includes leadership. And I will tell you personally at times, you know, I questioned myself, but I think, you know, well, going back to what doesn't kill you, make you stronger, what was born from that experience was, you know, re-clarifying what really matters, like people and purpose and adaptability. And, you know, you think of fire can be destructive. It can burn. It can destroy. It can be catastrophic. But that same fire can also warm a home in the middle of the winter time. And so I think perspective matters. And I learned perspective during the pandemic as well as a leader. Things will happen from day to day and time to time, but you have to have perspective and look at it from a standpoint of how does this make me stronger? And that's why that song by Kanye West really resonates with me when I think about leading in a post-pandemic landscape.
Doc, I'm just writing down the themes that you highlighted within your answer and really love that association. That doesn't kill you, only makes you stronger. Kanye West, I don't know if I call him Ye or is it Kanye or, you know, they got about 10 names, but the three words that resonates with me, Doc: purpose, people, and adaptability. And I think that, you know, I always label, I created a time ecology, BC stage, DC, and AC, before COVID, during COVID, and after COVID, and this post-pandemic that you referenced, this AC stage around purpose, people, and adaptability. I think we have to become more intentional with those three words, have to strengthen the vitality of purpose, people, and adaptability. But I think everyone in the superintendency role, I was a superintendent during COVID, they learned that P word that you suggested, perspective. It brought a new perspective on the next stages within the education paradigm, i.e. the AC stage of education. Usually I don't ask extended or sub questions on this question, but what resonates with me to the core is perspective. Can you unpack that for my audience? What does that look like now that we're in this post-pandemic stage and got that perspective in the DC stage of education during COVID-19?
Well, I think it's forced us to use reflection as a part of gaining perspective, right? Everybody was heightened during the pandemic. It was one of those polarities where there was not a right answer. You know, there were research that if you wore a mask, for example, that it could lead to sickness and illness. We also knew that not wearing a mask could lead to sickness and illness. And we were trying to find right or wrong. And sometimes it's not right or wrong. That's perspective. I didn't get that. I don't think we understood that early on. And it was through those trying times that we began to say, sometimes there's not a right or wrong. It's just a decision and where we have to land. And then you try to justify it with whatever, you know, data you can. But I think that just the birth of perspective as leaders in the educational landscape was the most transformational journey for me as a leader during that pandemic phase.
I like to, Dr. Barnes, look at things and kind of like, you know, this, and I'll use a statistical analogy: primary data, secondary data, and latent data. And when I look at the latent metrics from the pandemic, the polarities, right? The polarities of that. And I think that now when we talk about this new design of education within the model, the core learning, the perspective that was brought from COVID into this post-pandemic era has created these polarities around design where there isn't a right answer. And I think that we have to, again, when we think about those polarities that you talked about, and this is just specifically in this linear context of redesign of the industrial model to a learning ecosystem, we have to keep in mind the three words that you started out with: purpose, people, and adaptability. But I want to get into your book, author. Welcome to the club, bro.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I'm just trying to follow you, sir. I'm trying to follow you.
Congratulations on your book. And to my audience, Dr. Barnes' book is entitled The Modern Superintendent, A Guide to Instructional Leadership. Wow. Okay. So right there, A Guide to Instructional Leadership. Now in the AC stage of education, that is, I think, a foundational linchpin for that. But for level setting purposes, Doc, I want you to unpack the critical themes of your book. How did you define instructional leadership in your book? And what does instructional leadership mean in this digital paradigm of the AC stage of education?
So thank you for that, for setting that up. I'm going to back up a little bit. On June 25th, I also released Winning: Lessons on Life, Learning, and Leadership. This was a project that I had been working on for some time, and it's basically a chronicle of my life's journey. And it consists of 50 lessons or 50 chapters. And at the end of each chapter, I offer a life lesson on learning leadership. And the idea here is that it could be applied to the reader in everyday life, whether it's education, business, or just, you know, an everyday a person. During the project, in the latter part of the book, latter chapters, I begin to talk about the superintendency and the power of the superintendency and the fact that the superintendent is the chief advocate for all children in their community. Nobody else can say that. Not the mayor, not council, the superintendent as the chief advocate. And I begin to, as I begin to write in Winning, I discovered that there was the call in my heart to pause and then pull out the pieces around the superintendent's role as an instructional leader and write the modern superintendent. And that's kind of how that really came about. When I think about the
now,
modern...
Now, Dr. Barnes, I want to interject to my audience, not one, but two books. I'm not worthy. My bad. Go ahead. Continue.
Thank you for that. Thank you for that. You know, during my journey as a superintendent and attending professional development, workshops, seminars, conferences, however you want to describe them, I discovered that no one was talking about instructional leadership from the chair of the superintendency. Instead, we were just delegating learning to those who were on our cabinet or our principals, and there's nothing wrong with that. But I found and I was discovering that superintendents were drifting into the space of budget and finance and managing the political landscape and operations, yet we weren't being stewards of student learning. And that wasn't good enough for me. You're talking about a kid who had a dirty little secret until his sophomore year in college when he got exposed during a debate class, during a political science class, having a debate. And the kid that I was debating with ripped me to shreds and I couldn't respond. I couldn't put my thoughts together. And what I learned was I struggle reading and writing. And thank the Lord, I had a professor that took a liking to me and he challenged me and he worked with me. And that's why I write today. And so it's not enough for superintendents not to pay attention to instruction and be the instructional leader of their community. The standards and the priorities that we establish as superintendents, those things will get done. And so for me, the themes, getting back to your original question, sorry to go off on a tangent.
No, please. And Dr. Barnes, and that tangent is important because when we think about the role of the superintendency sitting in it, we can get so mired in budget, finance, operations, town, community, regional politics that we just we can forget instructional leadership, instruction within the learning organization. And then, you know, typically we just say, hey, to our chief academic officer or to our assistant superintendent of teaching and learning, you handle that. But we need to be hands-on stewards when it comes to setting the instructional agenda, i.e. the academic rigor through this level of coherence with all our buildings. It is a missing foundation of discussion amongst the work and amongst conversation. So you could have gone on for the next hour about this because that is so critical. Thanks for bringing that back, Dr. Barnes.
Well, I tell you, I couldn't have said it any better. I think you nailed it. It is important. I think it's a necessity for superintendents to remain intimately engaged in the instructional practices within his or her school community, 100%. Thematically, the superintendent, the modern superintendent, is really focused on vision, measuring what matters, assessment systems, and deep learning. I'll like to, for the sake of our discussion, focus on vision and then deeper learning. First, vision. I think there's no greater gift that a superintendent can give his or her community than a shared vision, where we bring stakeholders together, and that includes children, because their voice matters. And we develop this shared vision, because then it's not my vision. It's not Dr. Connor's vision, not Dr. Barnes's vision. It's our vision. That takes root. You know, when you plant a seed, it first grows down before it springs up. when you're establishing a vision collectively with stakeholders, to me, you're planning a route that anchors you into your big why. That's why I think that's important. On the back end, when we talk about deeper learning here, moving beyond the three R's, that's important. Our BHAG here is 100% literacy or 100% proficiency in reading and math as the foundation for all learning. However, that alone doesn't prepare students for a world that they're going to inherit that requires them to be adaptable, flexible, and nimble. And so for us, deeper learning marries the core also with those skills like critical and creative thinking, adaptability, flexibility, and a growth mindset. So that's kind of the framework and the themes of the modern superintendent. And again, I wasn't intending to write the modern superintendent. It was through the work of writing Winning, Lessons on Life, Learning, and Leadership. When I got to those chapters, I wanted to pull something out and make a contribution to the superintendency.
Absolutely. Yeah, and objectively stating this, you are making a huge contribution to the work that we're leveraging as superintendents. But what I want to focus on, and you know how I am, I'm a research science guy that lives through a lot of frameworks, development and the design. I really love the sequence of how you articulated instructional leadership for the superintendent, setting that shared vision, incorporating all voices within this vision, collective synergy to reach the ultimate goals, measurement, measuring the progress of the vision, aligning measurement, the vision and the measurement system to an assessment model that now can start facilitating deeper learning in this coherent context in a learning organization. To my audience, we use this, Dr. Barnes, as an asynchronous professional learning tool, i.e. heterogogy, even to that second tier of andragogy around adult learning, adult sciences in groups. To my audience, this is one of the answers that you want to be able to play back again, specifically when we talk about executive leadership in the context of instruction, systems level instruction, vision, measurement, assessment system, and what we need to facilitate to make learning more meaningful and authentic is deeper learning. Now, that whole deeper learning, I want to have this connected thread to this next question because, Doc, what you're doing out there, man, I hear it all across the country, right? They're like, hey, have you seen Dr. Barnes's Innovation Center? And I mean, they just go crazy over it. I don't care if I'm in the Midwest or in the Northeast, people are talking about what you have done from this innovation lens that facilitates that fourth dimension of your framework, deeper learning. But you know, you have this reputation for innovation and excellence, specifically under your instructional and executive leadership. First, what I want you to do, Doc, is I want you to unpack some of your signature innovation systems and programs that you have already leveraged in Mayfield City School. And two, you talked about your second domain or your second pillar within your framework, measurement, right? How do you measure the success of these innovative systems and programs beyond your third pillar, which is assessment model, right? Beyond the traditional metrics like achievement scores, percentiles, benchmark cut scores, how are you measuring those innovative programs?
Sure, thank you for that. As I transition and we transition into this conversation around innovation, I want to pull deeper learning along with us, okay? When we think about deeper learning here, we're thinking about expanding beyond students just simply being consumers of information to a point where they're producers of information and content themselves. Not just passive and receptive, but also, you know, generating thoughts and ideas outwardly and processing them and applying them to real world situations and challenges. And that's why, you know, we have six values, two of which one would think are opposed to one another. One is tradition. The other one is innovation. For us, I'm blessed to be in a community that values innovation, because they know that the landscape is ever evolving, the world's changing. And so they want us to innovate. So they welcome this. And so we opened the Mayfield Innovation Center some years ago, and it's really an incubator for design thinking, engineering, and entrepreneurship. And so we have robust specific programs in those spaces, but we also allow teachers to collaborate together to create courses that, based on student feedback, they can implement design thinking as a part of the experience within our Innovation Center. We also have a career technical consortium where we invited local school districts to participate in career readiness programs that lead to student earned credentials and real world experiences as well. So we're really, really excited about, you know, our career tech consortium. We have our portrait of a graduate. That's important as a part of innovation because that's really our North Star that helped us propel and lift up this concept around innovation and deeper learning. And then what typically gets, what has been getting the national attention, and here's a plug, on September 29th, because we've been having so many visitors over the last 3 years from across the country, we're gonna host two summits, one in the fall and one in the spring. The one in the fall is September 29th. Any of those who are listening to this podcast and would want to attend, we welcome you. We'll feed you. And, you know, we'll have a couple of fun days of learning together as thought partners. But the innovative program that people thirsting for is the option. We call it the option because we just didn't know what else to call it at the time. It's a fully customized school day for students.
I'm unbelievable.
Students schedule and design their own school day.
Unbelievable.
They touch base with a content teacher. We have an intervention specialist, a paraprofessional in there. We can have small group instruction, one-on-one instruction, large group instruction. They can come in and out. And what we were after here is to eliminate the barrier between time and learning. Doc, I know you're smarter than I am. And you may get through the sequence of a set of standards before I do. But why should you have to wait to assess until I'm ready? And why should you not be able to move on when you're ready? So we are intentionally just blowing up the concept of time and learning being diametrically opposed to one another, I should say. And so we're really excited about that. How do we measure that? We look for future readiness in all of these diverse programs. We offer surveys for our students to give us feedback. We look at post-secondary enrollment, workforce placement, and then student agency and engagement. Here's what's interesting about the option, for example. Because we've empowered students to have agency over their own learning, our attendance in school is off the roof.
Off the roof, off the roof, off the roof.
And when we asked students why, they said, because I'm getting to design my own learning.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Man, I tell you, to my audience, and this is the first time I'm saying this on VFV, Dr. Barnes, and I'm glad it's with another alpha man that I'm saying this. This answer needs to be replayed 4 or 5 times. If I was in the leadership role right now, executive leadership role, I would just segment this part out so that now we can be able to capture the high level themes around time and learning. Doc, I used to tell my staff that the industrial model is designed where learning is the variable and time is the constant. And I said, in order for our students to reach this level of individualization and personalization, time has to become the variable and learning has to become the constant. You have really—
Doc, can we dig deeper there, please?
Please, go ahead, Doc. Go ahead, okay. You go ahead.
Because I didn't want to take up too much time. But when I have two daughters, okay? The youngest one, Maya, very rigid. She needs structure. She doesn't like to be surprised. We kid her all the time and we say, Maya, you need to learn how to be more spontaneous. And she goes, I will if you let me know ahead of time.
That's a great response. That is a great, I'm going to use that one.
And then there's the older one, Michaela. She's 27. Now this kid's flexible, nimble, adaptable. She doesn't like routine. In fact, she likes shifts and turns and she likes to be surprised. Two kids raised in the same house, two different needs. We are intentional here in building our systems around personalization, since you mentioned it, to be responsive to both of those kids. Maya thrives in a 8-period, 50-minute per period day. That's the structure that she needs. That's a traditional modality that we have at Mayfield. We have four for students to choose from based on how they want to learn and experience school. So for Maya, the traditional day works. Then we have what we call cross-curricular, where we give students who need to make the natural connection between, let's say, English and social studies or math and science, to take those courses together, where we ask teachers to co-design a course working together for those students who need to naturally make those connections. That's number two. The third modality is self-paced. Self-paced takes a traditional class, call it Algebra 2, and the kids come to class, butts in seats, Monday, Wednesday, Friday. Let's call it third period. On Tuesdays and Thursdays, third period, kid doesn't have to report to class. They can go to one of our common learning spaces and work on whatever they want, English composition, a TED Talk, maybe a social studies project. However, if they need help, the teacher is in the classroom, so they can get one-on-one instruction or small group instruction. The benefit of that is we've embedded intervention within the school day instead of having it after school or before school. Many times there's a conflict. And then the fourth option is the option that I just explained to you, which is a fully customized school day where the kids can design their school day each day of the week, each day of the month, school year, et cetera. So why are we doing that? Because we want to give student agency. We want to personalize the experience. And through all of that, we've seen our attendance and engagements go through the roof. Yes.
If I was a student in Mayfield, I could actually choose between four different tracks that are specifically aligned, systemically aligned to A, my zone of proximal development, and B, to my learning modality. Wow. Dr. Barnes. Wow.
And it's the same set of standards, same pacing guides, but we allow kids who want to move on and are ready to move on to do so. Why would we want to hold them back? We live in an in-demand world. You and I can get up and move whenever we want. Why would we restrict our children? They're going to inherit a world that requires them to be flexible and adaptable and nimble. But there are also going to be needs for systems and consistency. And those are the experiences that my daughter Maya benefits from. We want to make sure that all kids are realizing their full potential within our system.
Now, Dr. Barnes, I completely understand why everybody is saying you got to go see what's going on in Mayfield. You left me speechless because a four-track design that has traditional cross-curricular, self-paced, and customization, students, families have agency and voice to be able to select their track. Doc, I, to be honest with you, with a lot of people say about my work, that sounds so theoretical, but I know with you, it is in place. Now, to my audience, you can actually see this on September 29th. Dr. Barnes, can you just give just high-level information about September 29th's visit? We're going to get your information at the end of the episode so that they'll be able to contact you or someone on your team to solidify their attendance at the September 29th event. But can you just provide some information that they will get to see this and much more coming to Mayfield on this day?
Yes, it will be a day and a half of learning and exchanging ideas. Those in attending will have the opportunity to talk to our students and our staff. They have the opportunity to witness firsthand all four of these learning modalities. the afternoon of the day of arrival will be the first iteration where they will be able to interview our students and our staff about these learning modalities. Day two, they'll actually be able to see it and touch it and feel it. We have buses lined up that will go from school to school. Of course, we'll feed you in there as well. And then we'll, and most importantly, learn together. We've been doing this now for 3 years. We're averaging anywhere from 250 to 300 visitors per year from across the country. The reason why we've decided to do a fall and a spring is because it began to become overwhelming with the number of requests to visit. And so we're kind of trying to put some structure around it and help people learn from us, and as well as us learning from them. But I think the big takeaway here is come see how we are bringing personalized learning to life and elevating student agency, voice, and choice.
Absolutely. To my audience, get down there. I gotta save some dollars up to get down there, Doc.
We got you.
I had to get that joke in. But please, my audience, go and see this. We'll get this information. I tell you, I've talked to many people across the country that has visited Dr. Barnes's work, Dr. Barnes's Learning Organization, and I get phone calls, text messages. The first thing they say, hey, your frat, your fraternity brother, got some innovative stuff at Mayfield's. I'm like, oh, I'm like, Doc? I was like, Brother Barnes? And they're like, you got to get there. You got to get there, Mike. So, but anyways, now I want to make a shift, okay, to you serving as the president for the Buckeye Association of School Administrators in Ohio, right? Now, you're hearing directly, Doc, right, as the president, superintendents and leaders, you know, about this fluctuation with federal funding. Just most recently, I guess the federal funding is released now. It seems like it switches by the day, right? Districts or districts and leaders with these immense and deep budgetary cuts. And let's call it what it is. And we have to call it out there, right? Navigating these political challenges within the education sector, specifically in their districts, Doc, I am seeing more and more and more and more superintendents I read about daily is engaging with something. And then when I get to the root cause of it, it's politically connected. Now, first, you as the face, the president of the Buckeye Association, now, how has the national state landscape, right, informed you within Mayfield and the state in the context of this iterative leadership signature, right? Because I think now, you know, not only, right, we have to be able to hold this instructional leadership lens at a high level, I always say that now being a superintendent, you have to learn the constructs of iterative leadership to navigate these political landmines, these challenges, federal funding, don't know what's coming on about that. How are you guiding superintendents and leaders today within your state?
We're fortunate enough here in Ohio that our association has really built a regional structure that has divided the state up into regions where we have informational meetings so that superintendents aren't traveling 2, 3, 4 hours away to get access to information because many of them don't have the budget to be able to do so. And so the association is actually taking it on the road to our superintendents and communities to share insight as it relates to the political landscape. You know, it causes us all to really lead with the mindset shift in real time. I learned an acronym when I was participating in the United States Army War College's National Security Seminar back in 2012 that I think applies still today. The acronym is VUCA, and VUCA stands for volatile, uncertain, complex, and ambiguous. When we know what's happening to us and that we're living in a VUCA world, I think we're better equipped to be responsive to the ever-changing political landscape. Because is it coming too fast? If that's the issue, that's volatility. Is it the uncertainty of a piece of legislation that is being considered? That's the uncertainty. Is it complex? You know, there's winners and losers. Rural districts win, urbans lose. Or is it just ambiguous, where it's just wide open and it's hard to really grasp? for me personally, and I've been sharing this as much as I can. In fact, yesterday I was honored to close at the new superintendent summit in Ohio, and reminding them that you got to try to compartmentalize what's happening, especially politically, in one of those buckets. Is it the volatility of it, the uncertainty, the complexity, or the ambiguity? And that really, really helps. The Buckeye Association of School Administrators also has provided a lot of opportunities for me and others to testify in front of members of our General Assembly about the potential devastation of some of these legislative considerations that are really generated at the feds. What we're seeing is the national narrative is really being, you know, funneled down to the states, and there's the intent to just implement, you know, the thoughts at the federal level. And my work with AASA as on the executive committee has allowed me to speak before members of Congress as well on these same budgetary issues and concerns. And so that brings it home for me when I get to come back to Ohio and go to Columbus and talk to our General Assembly about this. And, you know, I will give them credit. You know, they start way over here with some potentially damaging legislation, but I take my hat off to our superintendents here that show up, advocate, testify, because, you know, we find ourselves right now somewhere in a comfortable spot, but still vulnerable spot. You know, lastly, I'll say this, because I think this is important for us as we consider navigating the political landscape. Last year, I ran for president of AASA, and I was fortunate enough to make the ballot. And we went through the campaign, and it was very exhausting. But they asked a question in front of thousands of those in attendance. If you were to advocate for public education on a micro or macro level, how would you go about doing that? And Doc, I offered this framework that, to be honest with you, the Lord gave to me just, you know, that morning. And the framework is the head, the heart, and the feet. And what that means, the head represents the facts about public education, the fact that 12 million students are participating in career technical education courses and getting real world, real life experiences. The fact that 3 million students are participating in advanced placement courses. The graduation rate is nearing 90%, the highest it's ever been. Yet we're led to believe and feel that our public schools are failing. That's the heart, that's the head. The heart are the stories. The stories like a kid, Dominic, here in Mayfield, that was on the verge of dropping out, when we realized his attendance was poor because he was helping his family open up their restaurant. So time and learning, right? We control that. We made a schedule so Dominic can do both, help his family and come to school. Today, not only did Dominic graduate, but he owns 3 restaurants himself. That's the heart. Those are the story. And then the feet represents the advocacy, kind of what we're talking about, knocking on doors, calling our elected officials, and making sure that they truly understand the impact of some of this legislation that they're considering on our public schools and the children that we serve.
Phenomenal leadership, Dr. Barnes. Phenomenal leadership at the state level, the national level. I did hear about your keynote. Somebody sent me a text message yesterday, said you knocked it out the park. So I did hear about that. Come on, man. We look, you know how small the ecosystem is, but I love the fact that you brought up VUCA, right? Because I always use VUCA, you know, within, whether it be I'm speaking internationally or domestically about my 22nd century education model, but I also now I've been using this acronym called UNVICE, right? I always like to say this is the brother sister of VUCA. And UNVICE is uncertain, volatile, intersectionality, complex, and exponential. I always say that UNVICE is the 22nd century version of the 21st century version of VUCA, right? When we talk about VUCA and UNVICE, so vital in this leadership dimension in the AC stage of education. But I love your answer. I was there when it was with the presidents, and when you talk about the head, when I ran for it, and I talked about 3 things, and that was just coming off head, heart, and feet. I got that down in my notebook, Doc. From April, but you are absolutely right. And then, but please continue to support, right? Because I'm just seeing, and you know, people ask me all the time, Dr. Barnes, you know, when am I going to make the comeback? Right? I get many of calls on a weekly, biweekly, monthly basis about positions that are open. Would you consider this? Would you think about it? And I said, I have to heal first, because this political landscape for superintendents, wow. I'm like, they wouldn't be ready for such a change transformation agenda that's aligned to the 22nd century, let alone I'm not good with politics. And I think that superintendents now have to be able to add that within their leadership signature or repertoire, because it's like you can't move away from it. I want to focus on instructional leadership. I want to focus on governance capabilities and capital around goals and strategies of the SOP and help them leverage that from a community perspective. This whole politic thing, it will be very hard for me with regards to my whole focus is on kids, and I love kids a little bit more than the adults. So I don't think I'll be any good in this.
That's frustrating, right? Because what you just described is the real work.
Yes.
It's about children. It's about building ecosystems around learning. It's around elevating programs and pathways for students to discover their purpose and passion, right? And then you got to deal with all this political stuff. But I think it's intentional to knock us off of our why, right? And so, you know, I think the discovery here for all of us is how do we manage that disruption? What do you call it? Unvice? How do we manage all of that and still keep a laser focus on children? I tell you, the profession, we need you. We need you back whenever you're ready and whenever the Lord has tapped you on the shoulder and said you're ready, we need you back. Because it is transformational leaders like yourself that we need. You know, Tom Burton, a good friend of both of ours, does an exercise on the working genius. And one of the things that we discovered in a recent workshop was that, and this is no criticism, but the majority of the curriculum people that were in the room, they were really at the tenacity stage, which is the implementers. And there were very few people in the room that were at the idea end, which is could be why education is still, you know, struggling to transform in totality, like what you're talking about.
Absolutely. And Doc, I always say it, the quote from W. Everett Deming, every system is perfectly designed for the outcomes that it gets, right? And when we look at the implementers, look at the tightly coupled structures within the operating model, tightly coupled systems within the operating model that really negates ideologists like you and I that brings that to life. But Doc, now when we move into this, right, this whole idea stage, we talk about AI now. Now this is like, it's the hot topic in education. You and I said, we were talking about this in 2016, 17, you know, people thought we were crazy. Now every other topic is about AI, right? About disruptive technologies. But I think we need to start talking about more of the 22nd century trends because of the customers that we're serving, Generation Alpha and Generation Beta, right? So when we think about AI, disruptive technologies, 22nd century trends that are underscored in all facets of the operating model, specifically teaching and learning, right? Now, when we think about the context of system shifting, rooted in mindsets for innovation, kind of talks about what Tom Burton with his work with the working genius and that and the different categories with that. What do you feel needs to be the flexible, agile, adaptive guide to realizing educational settings to prepare students, Generation Alpha, Generation Beta, for the future of the world, future of the work? You already done it. You took core theory, time, learning, and you disrupted it to create a flexible model for all, truly for all. What's your track? But leaders out there, how do we create this flexible guide? What does this look like?
Great question. I think it involves a dynamic, visionary framework, and it should be centered on, and it shouldn't be static. Okay, it should be dynamic, and it starts with vision, and it shouldn't be static. And I think it should center on, I talked a lot about this, it should center on student agency, giving students voice and choice over their learning, allow them and elevate them to take ownership of their own learning. And when we talk about AI in that space as well and leveraging that technology, you know, the pencil used to be a form of technology way back in the day as well. And it's not something that we should be afraid of, but how do we leverage it, you know, to enhance learning and learning experiences for our children? I think the other thing is we have to redefine literacy and redefine it in a standpoint that we expand it from, you know, reading, writing, and speaking to teaching kids to navigate ambiguity and critical thinking and the use of technology ethically. You know, to me, I think that's an expanded definition of what the future of literacy could look like. That, again, that's a part of that dynamic visionary framework that I started with. I also think, you know, micro-credentialing and pathways, you know, breaking the mold of seed time learning. Again, going back, you know, you arrive at a deeper understanding of a standard before I do, you shouldn't have to sit there and wait for me. And whatever micro-credentialing we can obtain for your work, my work, I think that should be a part of the student experience. And then I think the other thing is, you know, embedding professional learning within the job. And that involves being tech enhanced and having a mindset shift. This all has to be fluid, personalized, and deeply human. But I think pulling AI into that entire experience, leveraging, you know, the idea of a dynamic visionary framework, you know, gets us at this flexible guide that you're talking about.
Absolutely. And Doc, the dynamic visionary framework that you're talking about around vision, student agency, embedding professional learning in the model, is all critical, all essential as we start thinking about this AI integration, disruptive technologies in various sectors and vectors of the learning organization. Albeit, I love how you said redefining literacy and the definition that you provided to my audience. Replay this answer, because when Dr. Barnes started to highlight his definition of redefining literacy, I automatically went to the McKinsey study that talks about Delta 2030, distinct elements of talent, and the two missing domains that are in the Delta 2030 that are obsolete, or I should rephrase that, the two domains that are missing within the industrial model of education is self-leadership and digital that you highlighted, Doc, and those supporting indicators within those two domains. But Doc, last question. You made it through VFE. I'm not even going to wait till this comes out. I'm going to just absolutely analyze the raw data for my personal repertoire.
You're too kind. I appreciate you.
Man. But Doc, I think that I'm probably going to be the only fraternity brother, only professional that's going to limit you to three words. All right.
Okay.
Only the three words. Now, every single guest on VFE does not listen to me. So take this question as it is, as I always say. But what three words, Doc, do you want today's audience to leave our podcast with regarding innovation and excellence for the 22nd century learner in the AC stage of education?
Yeah, three words is tough. I come from a family of Baptist preachers. But I'll give it my best. I would say purpose, possibility, and courage. Purpose keeps us grounded in what matters most, our children. Possibilities allows us to innovate. It puts us in the mindset to innovate. And courage, you have to be willing to plant seeds that you may never see blossom. That's courage.
Purpose, possibility, and the last word I think is the strongest is courage. Dr. Michael J. Barnes, Superintendent of Mayfield City Schools. Listen, this episode, man, was phenomenal, unbelievable. To my audience members, if they want to contact you specifically on that national visit,
to Makeville City that is occurring on September 29th. How would they be able to contact you or a member of your team to
email me directly at mbarnes, B-A-R-N-E-S, at mayfieldschools.org.
Absolutely. And please make sure you get in contact with Dr. Barnes. I want to make sure that, you know, he has a myriad of different flights coming in across the country to Ohio on September 29th. Doc, I appreciate you for coming on VFV. Fraternal, professional love, brother love. Thank you, man. I just admire all the work that you're doing. I'll tell you this, I'm going to have to be able to come down there multiple times because I want to be able to see this four-track design. Now, when I was superintendent, I just, this is not you, but this is a microcosm of your design, a five vertical innovation hub where students would be able to actually opt into those five tracks, and it's all a hands-on experience. But I did not bring it to the macro level like you. I admire that work. You have me speechless. Not many people can have me speechless, but you have me speechless. Doc, I love your brother, man, and thank you for coming on VFE.
Love you too, man. Appreciate the opportunity, and God bless you.
And on that note, onward and upward, everybody. Have a great evening.